Hi, everyone. Judge Andrew Napolitano here for Judging Freedom. Today is Wednesday, April 8th, 2026. Phil Giraldi joins us now. Phil, it's always a pleasure. Thank you very much. I am anxious to hear your analysis of the so-called ceasefire. But before we get there, what were your thoughts when you heard President Trump's Easter Sunday profanity-laden threatening message?
Well, I mean, the first reaction was, of course, I wasn't surprised, because Trump is has basically been this way ever since he's been in the White House, and so I kind of expected that trash talking from Donald Trump would be the norm. I was quite outraged by the fact that he was doing this on Easter. I mean, this is a guy who, I don't know what his religiosity is, but he certainly has some strange people hanging around him. And this is not the Christian thing to be doing. So I was completely outraged by that. And I hoped like hell somebody would lower the boom on him, call him in, and how about a little impeachment going on here, buddy?
Well, what was your reaction to the follow-up in which he threatened to destroy the Iranian civilization?
That was even worse. I mean, because that's going public. He's the chief spokesman for the United States of America, of which we are citizens, and he's speaking for us, and he's guaranteeing not just a genocide, but a genocide, if he was the way he was phrasing it, it's something to kill like millions, multiple millions of people, innocent people in most cases. And this is what he was talking about. So he was obviously implying, I think, that he just might be using nuclear weapons to do the job.
Yeah, he did make some follow-up comments about I have some tools available that nobody even knows about. I don't know what that would have been, maybe something short of nuclear, but as destructive as nuclear. Nobody challenged them. Nobody in Western Europe challenged them. Nobody in the Congress challenged them. Nobody in the Republican Party challenged them. I mean, the usual outrage came from liberal Democrats and some media journalists, but nobody in any government except for one or two senators, Blumenthal and Murphy of Connecticut and Markey of Massachusetts, really expressed any outrage.
The thing is, he's got everybody terrorized. His behavior is so bad, is so outrageous, and he goes after people that in any way he views as critical of him or as opposed to his views or anything like that. He fires them. He tries to get them into court and sue them. This guy's a monster. And unfortunately, as you say, everybody is just so afraid of him that they don't want to take him on. And that's got to stop.
Here's Senator Markey. Well, I doubt you agree with Senator Markey on many things. He's a classic Massachusetts liberal Democrat. But here's outrage almost of a Gerald Celente level. Here he is yesterday, cut number 14.
Donald Trump has surrendered, not the Iranians. And what he has been doing over the last several days is an impeachable offense. He has threatened a genocide against a nation. He has threatened to end a civilization. He has threatened to use nuclear weapons against a country that does not have nuclear weapons. All of these are impeachable offenses, and he must be brought to justice. The House and Senate should be brought back into session. There should be articles of impeachment brought against him by the Democrats in the House of Representatives. We need to make Donald Trump accountable for what he has just done in the name of the American people. And I think this is going to be a defining moment for the Congress, for the American people. We cannot allow Donald Trump, in control of nuclear weapons, to be invoking this madman theory of the destruction of a civilization in the name of the American people without him being brought to accountability. The impeachment process must begin.
Say, Phil.
Bravo. I agree with every word of it. This guy is way over the line of acceptable behavior for any human being. And he says it's particularly over the line in the fact that he's in representing our country. And not only is he representing our country, he has obviously sufficient control over the armed forces of our country to send them off to wars illegally and immorally. And he keeps doing it. And so somebody has to say no to him. It would be better if it would come from the Republicans, because Republicans should be outraged by someone from their party doing this kind of thing.
But, Trump's behavior is going to result in fewer Republicans in the Congress after next January, when the November elections take place. On the so-called ceasefire, do you think that Trump threw Netanyahu under the bus?
Well, my personal opinion would be no, and I'll tell you why. I mean, the principal reason why I'm saying no is because Trump has not stood up to Netanyahu ever. So why are we assuming in this situation suddenly he's, as you put it, throwing Netanyahu under the bus? I just don't buy it. I think this is a scam. I think he had plenty of conversations with Netanyahu before it was decided what to do. And the reason why I suspect they wanted to do this was because the war is not going very well for Israel or for the United States. They needed a little rest and a little recuperation to figure out where to go next and what to do next. So I figure what they decided to do was to buy themselves a couple of weeks. And after a couple of weeks, the war will resume. And we even see this situation going on in Lebanon today. The Israelis have really unloaded on Lebanon. I guess they saw this as a free window to take on the threat that they saw as most immediate, which is what's going on in Lebanon with Hezbollah. And so they're pounding away up there. They've killed over 100 Lebanese, according to press reports I just heard. And this is just typical. I have a feeling, as they say, this is something that Netanyahu and Trump came up with. And they have never, ever, the two of them, done what they said they would do in these so-called ceasefires. Think about it. Syria, Lebanon, Gaza, every one of these ceasefires has been gruesomely violated by the Israelis, with Trump standing there with his thumb up his behind. You know, it's just, when is this crap going to stop? We had a decent country here. Where did Donald Trump come from? Can we send him back to Germany?
The New York Times has a very lengthy piece this morning blaming the war on Netanyahu and sure. on his persuasive abilities with Trump. And it describes in a fair amount of detail, I don't know how they got this, but a lot of detail about conversations that Trump had with Netanyahu and with his inner circle, Rubio, Hegseth, Vance, Ratcliffe, his chief of staff, Susie Wiles, and one or two other people whose names I didn't recognize. But the conclusion of the article is that Trump feels betrayed now by Netanyahu and by Hegseth that they oversold the war. According to the article, Vance against the war. General Kane, there's no way we can accomplish these military objectives. Marco Rubio, don't listen to everything Netanyahu says. There's no way you'll achieve your objectives. Hegseth, oh yeah, we'll win in a weekend. Hegseth just mouthed what Israeli Mossad leader David Barnea and Netanyahu himself had said. After Netanyahu left the room, the criticism of him was quite severe. General Kane called it farcical. Secretary Rubio called it BS, but he said the full word. Vice President Vance said, this will ruin your legacy. I'll back you because I'm your vice president. Hegseth, of course, was Pistol Pete. When can we start? What do you think?
Well, I read the article this morning. I found it fascinating. But, you know, there are always things that are kind of, you can look at it different ways. I think the problem is that even though it's obvious what Netanyahu's agenda is and what he has been trying to do, Trump is just too damn ignorant, I think, to figure this stuff out. And let's go beyond Netanyahu. And when you have the Mossad chief of station staying at Blair House for multiple days and being a honored guest at the White House every time he wants to walk the three blocks over there, you know, there's something very sick about that. We have our own intelligence services in this country, and presumably that we have them for a purpose. And instead, Donald Trump prefers to talk to the Israelis and prefers to talk to Mossad. And naturally, he's being sold a bundle of crap, but he's willing to buy into it. He's been willing to buy into it every damn time. And that's really the problem. Now, all right, all of a sudden, he's seeing, oh, wow, that Netanyahu, he's really been fooling me. He should have figured that a heck of a long time ago. And, of course, the fact is he's only saying that because this war is going very, very badly. And maybe Trump, with his three brain cells that actually are functional, has figured that one out. And so he's looking for a scapegoat.
You know, I think you've already answered this, but let me ask it with a little more precision. How does the CIA feel when the president of the United States rejects the collective wisdom of the CIA? And John Ratcliffe is a neocon and a Trump guy, and denounces the Mossad version. And then the president accepts and goes with the Mossad version. How do guys like you, an officer in the field, risking your life every day to acquire assets and data of help to the White House, feel when that is rejected in favor of the data acquired by a foreign organization?
Well, I could tell you very exactly how that goes, because a lot of the people in the community that I still know were former colleagues, and we talk about these things. There are two levels of this. The one level is to be really totally disgruntled and annoyed at what's going on with the American president, the American CIA director, and all these other people that, like our Secretary of War, that are involved in this process, that are basically moving it along. But working level people in the CIA, there are more than 20,000 of us. We basically, I found when I was overseas, everybody hated Israel. And we hated Israel for the good reasons. The good reasons were that even back then, you go back to Bill Clinton and everything like that, or you go back to LBJ, and we've had presidents after president that are manipulated by the state of Israel to do what Israel wants done, and it's to do damage to the United States. And when we encountered intelligence officers from Israel overseas, I cannot tell you over a public station like this the invective and the language that would be used to refer to the Israelis. We couldn't stand them.
So Netanyahu must have prevailed on Trump's weaknesses. He's got a short attention span. He doesn't read. He's not interested in detail. He's beholden to Mrs. Adelson and her wealthy friends. I would imagine that Trump was just grist. I mean, Netanyahu's a smart guy. He's a monster, but a smart guy. But Trump must have just been grist for his mill.
Yeah, just that's one way to put it. And, of course, the money aspect is a big thing, too. And right now, you can be sure the Israel lobby is cranking up if they believe that this is a true narrative, that, in fact, Netanyahu and Trump are basically going to, you know, get a bit of a rest to figure out where we go next before they start the war again. Now, Trump might be selling that to him, or maybe it's true, maybe it's false. But I rather suspect that it is true. And I think Larry Johnson this morning also said that he rather suspects by the end of the week that this will be starting up again.
Well, the Israelis, of course, have been murdering people in residential neighborhoods and downtown areas of Beirut. Mm-hmm. Pepe Escobar says that the foreign minister of Iran told the Pakistanis and asked them to tell the U.S. that if Netanyahu and company don't stop by a Thursday morning, they will begin to attack Israel more severely than ever. And Alistair Crook sent me a note. Let me see if I can find it. Here it is. This is from Alistair. The Israeli security cabinet will convene tonight. That's a Wednesday night, to discuss a possible preemptive attack on Iran. Israeli security establishment has information that Iran is considering launching missiles towards Israel due to its ongoing raids in Lebanon.
There you go. That's the bogus story that they immediately come out with to explain why they're going to do something like that. The Iranians announced, I believe they signaled to the Pakistanis that the message has to go to Trump that, look, Israel, that Israel has to behave if there's any hope for this agreement even to proceed. And but they don't care. The Israelis do not care. They do not care anything. They don't care how many Americans die as an end result of their ambitions. This is why this is so outrageous, and so many people finally are waking up to the fact Israel's not only not our friend, they're our enemy.
Wow. Here's Chris just captured this. I'm going to guess it's very, very recent. You will not like this, but here's Netanyahu's latest. Chris?
I have said that I've insisted that the ceasefire with Iran does not include Lebanon, and this is what is happening. Today, we have dealt Hezbollah the biggest blow that it has suffered since the Pager operation. We targeted 100 command sites, headquarters, in 10 minutes. They didn't know what happened.
So he is insisting that the ceasefire does not include Lebanon. The intermediary, who's either the chief of the army or the prime minister, I'm not sure what rank he is. You know, the army really runs Pakistan. But the intermediary amongst the Pakistanis said it absolutely does include Lebanon. The foreign minister of Iran says it includes Lebanon, and if it doesn't, there is no ceasefire. So where are we going?
That's why I suspect this might be a scam, you know, because the two knuckleheads talk together on the phone, and Netanyahu said, hey, let's kind of, you know, get a breathing spell here, and we'll use it to wipe out Lebanon. And Trump probably said, gee, that's a really good idea. And, you know, this is, these two people are criminals. They're war criminals. They should be in prison somewhere. And here they're disrupting and the entire, well, they're disrupting the entire world at the moment. And they're probably grinning about it. This is awful.
What do we do, Phil? I mean, I guess there is the option for impeachment. That's not realistic, at least until after the midterms, if the Democrats take one or two of the houses. But there's nothing to stop him. I mean, the president of the United States is known not to be interested in detail or even in facts. No. The prime minister of Great Britain knows how to play him like a fiddle.
Well, he's easily playable. All you have to say that he's a, get close to him, you tell him he's a genius, he's the greatest president that ever existed in this country, that he's a wonder for the world, and he's changing everything for the better. That's all he wants to hear. And so you get all these politicians, the one thing they're good at is lying. So they lie to him. They tell him all these things.
Wow. Phil, thank you very much. I suspect that a lot of your analysis, as sad as it is true.
I was thinking today about doing my income tax. And I said, I was thinking back to the Vietnam War when people refused to submit their taxes to the U.S. government. Can we do that again?
I don't know whatever happened to them. Ask Ray McGovern. He's probably one of them. Ray keeps going to these demonstrations, and he tells Chris, I don't know if I can be on the show. I think I'm going to get arrested. And then he's disappointed that he didn't get arrested.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Phil, it's a pleasure, my dear man, no matter what we're talking about. I hope we get to see each other soon at one of these gatherings like we have once a year. All the best to you and to Angela. A belated happy Easter. We'll see you next week, my friend.
Okay, thank you. Looking forward to it.
Sure. Bye-bye.